So thanks for your invitation to speak here. I hope you are all not too tired from this conference and can still pay a little bit of attention. So I'm going to talk about mostly joint work with Lucas about understanding unitary TFTs in mostly two dimensions and fully local unitary TFTs, but this is a sort of combination of joint work with a lot of people. I will give references at the end, in particular like a large collaboration where we figured out what higher dagger categories are. And I'm going to work in the ATIA framework of TFTs and tell you what we think unitarity is there. So here's an outline, what I'm going to talk about. So I'll start talking about, I will try and convince you that unitarity has something to do with Hilbert spaces, and that one way to understand Hilbert spaces, that we have to understand what Hilbert spaces are sort of in more general categories. So we'll try and explain what pairings are on symmetric monoidal categories. Then to explain subtleties related to what pairings should be called positive, just like a Hilbert space is called positive, sort of positive definite pairings. I will underline some problems when fermions are present. Then I will reformulate or phrase it in my favorite way, what a unitary TFT is using so-called dagger categories. It's related to this Fried-Hopkins formulation as well. And then I will switch from the slides to the blackboard, if that will work, and sort of explain, I will redo the first part, but then I will not work with the classical non-extended TFTs, but I will work in category level 2, which is my highest category number, and say something about extended TFTs. So work with so-called dagger 2 categories, and particular explain to you what could those be. In particular, there's a relationship between the two-dimensional case where you don't just have O1 equivariance but potentially O2 equivariance. I'll explain that and what the relation is with the spin statistics theorem. And finally, our theorem in progress on the classification of 2D unitary TFTs. So okay, I will start with, so what is unitary in quantum field theory? So unitarity is like this column here. In physics, state spaces, in topological quantum field theory, state spaces are just vector spaces, but maybe we want them to come equipped with a positive definite pairing. Observables, they're supposed to be algebras. They're come equipped with like a sort of daggering operation. You can talk about self-adjoint observables. And they have some sort of property that things that you would call positive, they have positive spectrum. So that's a desirable property. And I want to sort of give an in-between column that's not often discussed maybe in the physics literature, where you don't have a Hilbert space, but you only have a pairing, but it's not necessarily positive definite. So it's sort of in my head, it's a two-step procedure. A vector space can come equipped with a pairing, and it can be positive or not, and if it's positive, it's unitary, and otherwise I will call it Hermitian, because those things are usually called Hermitian vector spaces. Maybe you have a star algebra, the positive things don't have positive spectrum. And then I will sort of do the analogous, I will explain the analogous things for TFTs now. And if you're a physicist, then feel free to think of, like, I'm a mathematician, so I think of topological field theories as an inherently interesting thing, but probably you want to think of them in your favorite way as, I don't know, low-energy effective theories of interesting things. But I will just assume that everyone has seen this formalism before, in which TFTs are functors from Bordism categories, and I will try and figure out, okay, how can we implement Hilbert spaces here? So one first sort of guess, naive guess, is maybe that you will just replace vector spaces with Hilbert spaces and try and take functors into those, but mathematically you immediately arrive at a problem, which is that finite dimensional vector spaces are actually equivalent as a category to finite dimensional Hilbert spaces. So you need to somehow remember some of the structure. Since things like unitary operators are important in physics, maybe you want to remember this sort of conjugate transpose operation, which defines a functor from the Hilbert space, category of Hilbert space, to its opposite. So, okay, maybe we should take this thing very seriously and try and define it on the Bordism side too. So maybe the Bordism side also, you could talk about adjoints of Bordisms maybe or something. So let's try that. So here's the abstract definition. Suppose that I have a symmetric monoidal category and it comes equipped with a Z2 action. So I can map an object to something I will call its bar, and then it squares to the identity in some way. And what is a Hermitian pairing on an object of this category? Well, it's sort of the diagram that you would write down if you would try and figure out what Hermitian is. It's like some skew symmetric property. And okay, it needs to be a non-degenerate pairing. Maybe people have seen non-degenerate pairings before. So X bar needs to be realized at the dual of X. So by non-degenerate, I mean in terms of string diagrams that, okay, X bar is the dual of X. So you have you have a co-pairing and you have diagrams that look like this, right? So you have these and the other way around. Maybe people have seen that before. So it's a non-degenerate pairing. Okay, and maybe you have those also on Hilbert, on not just on Hilbert spaces, but you also maybe have them on Bordisms. And you can do a lot of like things that you can do with the category of Hilbert spaces in this general setting. So if you have two objects equipped with pairings, then so suppose that you have a morphism, then you can still define the conjugate transpose as follows. So let's denote by F transpose sort of the dual of this morphism with respect to those pairings. So I guess that I should draw a diagram again. So you have those pairings, and if you have a morphism, then you have like a corresponding sort of dual morphism that satisfies something like this. So that's the adjoint. And then I can define the Hermitian adjoint in which I additionally need to bar by, additionally barring here. So that defines like a daggering operation. And that's something also known in category theory. It's called a dagger category. So suppose that we take this category that we have, but now we consider pairs of non-degenerate pairings on objects together with sort of as morphisms, we just take the underlying morphisms of C, then you can show that this defines the so-called dagger category, just like Hilbert spaces is. So you have a functor from C to C up, it's the identity on objects, and then it's a sort of strict anti-involution on the category. And as I said, okay, you can do this for vector spaces, then these are finite dimensional Hermitian vector spaces, so they're not yet Hilbert spaces. If we want Hilbert spaces, we just throw out the rest that we don't like. Okay, so one idea to do this is maybe to make the Bordism category into a dagger category. And before sort of doing this, I first want to highlight a maybe different direction that you could go into, which turns out to actually be equivalent. So maybe another observation how you could do this, right? Looks better. Let's do that. So if you have a unitary quantum field theory, then sort of on the top, this partition function, it satisfies that it maps the orientation reversal of a manifold to the complex conjugate. So it has some sort of Z2 equivariance property. So this gives us the idea of maybe trying to make the Bordism category, so give this Z2 action, where the Z2 action is orientation reversing manifolds, space and space-time. And a definition that I know from Fried Hopkins is they call it a reflection TFT, I forgot, but I call it a Hermitian TFT. It's a Z2 equivariant functor, so it's sort of a categorification of what I did over there in the topological case. And it's not hard to show that these Hermitian TFTs, they preserve Hermitian pairings. So if you have this pairings now on the Bordism category, non-degenerate pairings, they will map to some Hermitian pairings in the target. And in fact, I've shown that in some sense, these Hermitian TFTs like this, they are equivalent to dagger functors from the Bordism category to vector spaces. But here I sort of chose all possible pairings, but now we want only positive definite ones, right? We want to land in Hilbert spaces. So, okay, maybe we want to demand this functor for unitary 2FT. Maybe we want to demand this functor to land in Hilbert spaces. But that's not quite the right idea. We really want to sort of figure out which of these should be called positive. And I will now motivate that. And the easiest way to motivate that is by first redoing the same story, but including spin and fermions. So physicists probably know what I'm going to say. It's not sort of straightforward physically to implement spin and fermions. You just put spin structures on space-time, and then you land in supervector spaces. So you just require a functor like that. So maybe this is a good definition of a fermionic topological field theory. So how do you now define orientation reversal? This is a little bit more subtle, but here's one sort of thing that turns out to work pretty well. So if you have a spin structure, which in particular includes a spin principle bundle, then I can sort of cross it with the pin bundle. So I make it twice as large. I take the orientation reversing part of that, and I define that to be, you can make that into a new spin structure. So this is the question that I wanted to ask, which I asked before. Which forms should we consider positive? Which are those that should map to positive to Hilbert spaces in a TFT? And here's a motivating example that will tell us why it's pretty subtle. So this is a very simple example. We're just considering a one-dimensional theory. So in one dimension, the one-dimensional Borism category is very simple. So what is the data of such a TFT? It maps the, say, positively oriented point to some vector space. It's a supervector space graded by fermion parity, and it has a completely separate representation of spin 1, which is Zma 2, which sort of preserves this grading. If you're a physicist, you might now complain, and these two representations have to be equal because of spin statistics, but I'm not putting that in just yet. But suppose that it is a Hermitian topological field theory, so that means that it preserves this barring operation. Then there's two interesting pairings that we can consider here. So somehow there's one coming from, there's two Borisms now like this. So you have the positively oriented point and the negatively oriented point. I could do this, or I could do sort of the same thing, but then I sort of exchange the two sheets here. Like I put, I don't know how to denote this. So maybe one where you do this and one where you exchange the two. So you put sort of the non-trivial Z2 action over there. And these two, they differ by this Z of C. So you can, it's always a bad idea to ask both of these to be mapped to Hilbert spaces, because then, then it does not depend on the spin structure. So we're going to say that the only unitary theories are those that are bosonic. So that's very bad. So you have to be a little bit careful with what you allow in your theory. And I'm not going to go into details what it actually, how you do this, unless people start complaining. Well, I think I will also not do it if people start complaining. But so apparently you can choose something that I really like, which gives good properties. So let P denote these sort of pairings that I like to call positive on the spin Borism category. And then we just throw out the stuff that we don't like, just like with Hilbert spaces. And then we define unitary TFTs to be Dagger functors to super Hilbert spaces as such. And I did a lot of things, but if people know the work of Free Hopkins, then it turns out that this will actually give sort of an equivalent way to formulate their non-extended TFT framework. So what did I just do? So I'm going to reformulate what I just did in a slightly more abstract way, because it will generalize to the two categorical case. So what did I just do? I explained to you what Dagger categories are. Dagger categories are sort of anti-involutions of a category, and they're strict. If you're symmetric monoidal, I forgot the duals. So anyway, if you're symmetric monoidal and you have duals, then you get a sort of not quite such a thing, but you get a weak anti-involution. Duals, like the double dual of an object is not equal to its original thing, but there's a canonical isomorphism. And what you apparently want to do is you want to take a Z2 action, and you can twist this anti-involution with it. And then you get some different anti-involution, which is this thing. And this is the thing that we really like, because if you trivialize this thing, if you pick an isomorphism between X and X bar star, well, that's a Hermitian pairing. And once you pick a Hermitian pairing, then you actually get such a thing. That's how you construct such things. OK. And now I want to go, OK, so there's a list of references. So now I'm going to continue on the blackboard to tell you about the two categorical situation. But maybe this is the right time also to ask questions.
Yes, for
questions.
Well,
there's no rush. I mean, I didn't pause for a second for questions, so there's probably a question.
Okay, that's all the same. Is it not just this?
Yes.
Okay. So this issue with the two different pairings of point, is the idea that if you glue the points together, you get the two spin structures on the circle?
Yes. So
that's why they get different
orisms. That's why. Sorry.
That's why they're like different orisms and give different things.
Exactly. So I mean, if you would complete them with the same thing on the other side, then they would give the two different spin two different circles. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
And they wouldn't both need to give positive numbers.
I should ask loudly for them to
write some screen. So wait, can we change the screen?
Isn't there a command on the
screen? No, we are left out.
It's a model control, so I don't need to get that thing from the...
We don't suck the screen.
Okay, can you erase the screen, please? We need to switch to that one. Sorry.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. Okay, so I already started to go a little bit more in the abstract direction. I will continue for a little bit more to tell you in a more abstract way what Dagger categories are. So to tell you about two categories, I'm first going to tell you a little bit about string diagrams. So what do string diagrams look like? So in string diagrams, you draw one and two morphisms in R2, for example. And so you label regions with objects of your two category. And you label crossings with one-dimensional submanifolds with one morphisms. And then a crossing of three things you label with two morphisms. And then you can interpret this into your two category. And what can I do if I make such a picture? Well, I could try to maybe reflect something. So for example, if I reflect it like this, then what do I get? I get a different picture, which looks like so. So let's see, Z, I should draw a little bit bigger, phi, hg. And then, okay, so what did this mean here? So my, let's see, okay, so let's say that I draw that my one morphisms go from right to left. So then what does this mean? This means that I have a one morphism like this. I have a one morphism like this. I have a one morphism like this. And then let's say the two morphisms go from top to bottom. Sorry?
G arrow is backwards.
Oh. Thank you. So if I try to, it's the advantage of a blackboard, I make mistakes, so people have to pay attention. So if I reflect this like this, then I get a diagram in which I sort of draw the same thing, except that phi is now the other direction. So while I can interpret this as sort of inside my two category, if I would try and interpret this diagram, it would not make sense, because the morphisms go not in the right direction. Instead, it would make sense as a diagram in the opposite. And similarly, I could reflect in the other direction.
In two categories, how does opposite work? You reflect.
I can make a new category in which the two opposites formally go in the other direction. Yes.
That's what he means by two opposites.
Exactly.
Thank you, sir.
So I have two opposites now. I have a two opposite, and I could do the reflect, the other reflection. So this is like reflect y, maybe. Or wait, what do you call this? Reflect y or reflect x?
Just call it reflect.
Okay. Then you land in the one opposite, in which you reverse the direction of one morphisms. So previously, one in the middle, right? That was the trick, in the middle. Yeah. Previously, what I did was I defined Dirac categories as going from C to C up, and now I seem to have more options, right? I can now do Dagger sort of on the top, which reverses the direction of two morphisms. I can do Dagger bottom, which reverses their direction of one morphisms. And maybe I could even ask for both plus a compatibility condition. So, or both, so both. And this notion of both actually already exists in the literature. This is called a bi-involutive two category. So people have considered these things that are now reappearing. But I already started talking about duals, and it turns out that when you have duals, you can do even more. So what can I do? Suppose that I take this diagram and I reflect it twice. So I rotate it by 180 degrees, and then it's going to be a huge challenge for me to draw it. Can I draw here? I can draw here, right?
Yes. Like an infinite number of boards, it's roughly.
How many? But this is not a blackboard, right? Or is this also? Can I draw here?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
We have nine blackboards.
Whoa. What a luxury. Okay, so I will rotate it. And then, unfortunately, okay, I should have drawn a diagram that's like, that is less symmetric than what I draw, because now it looks like I'm getting the same thing, but I'm not. I'm taking that diagram and I'm going to rotate it like such. So then I guess that here will be now the Z. And then unlike in this picture, let's see, then here will be the X and here will be the Y. And then I can interpret it as a picture inside C1-op, 2-op. However, if I have adjoints, then I can do something else. Namely, I can put this in a box, and then I can put this box in a bigger box, and I can rotate things. So what I can do is I can do this, and I should have made more space. And then, actually, I can interpret it as, again, as a morphism in B, where, I will never be able to recover without your help what things are. But for, I think that this was H. So then maybe this is now, okay, so you have to rotate. So maybe this is, okay, I don't know what the difference is between right and left, but maybe this is the right adjoint of H, for example. So what do I get? I can interpret this as a picture in B because there is an equivalence between B and B1-op, 2-op, given by the right adjoint. And so if I have adjoints, then I can do more than that thing. So if B has adjoints, what I can do is I can compare. So I can require, for example, that dagger top is dagger bottom, and then an adjoint. So I can require for more compatibility is the conclusion. Okay.
Well, so you mean I'm supposed to go in and put it into my favorite coherence? Coherence as an exercise for me.
It means that I was too lazy to for myself to work this out with full coherence before the talk, and I was just guessing that it would work without the coherence, but I don't actually know. This is not saying that maybe one remark is that this is not saying that top and bottom sort of determine each other, right? Because the as like an involution, this is a remark just for Theo, because the bottom one also contains a datum of how it squares the identity. Right? Okay. Anyway, maybe we should discuss this later.
So you say so as a weak involution, these determine each other.
Yes.
Each one has more information, and this equality is an equality of what? It's like you're asking them just to be equal as involutions, or you're asking them to be equal as involutions with more data that I don't understand.
Oh, I'm saying that, no, I think I'm saying that this is a condition on this data.
And the condition is on the involution, on the weak involutions, or on?
Yes. I'm saying something on strict involutions here. Anyway, okay, where was I? Okay, yeah, so the next point on the last slides that I had is that I can say more if I'm symmetric monoidal. So suppose that my two categories are actually symmetric monoidal, then I can do more. I can use duals, push in the middle. It's actually irrelevant, that sign. I can use duals to trivialize, to sort of get an isomorphism to one op. So this, what is there to say? So maybe a more abstract way to say this is that for the people that like these kind of things is that there's an O2 action on two categories with adjoints. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to trivialize that two action. So this action, which maps B to its one opposite. And this gives you a trivialization. But then I had this other thing, which is the rotating picture. And I still have to tell you how to sort of trivialize the SO2 action. So how do I trivialize the SO2 action? The SO2 action is given by rotating this even more. It's rotating it by 360 degrees. So I have to do this twice, and I get a double right adjoint. So I'm also claiming that you can do two right adjoints. What am I saying? Yeah. Oh. You can trivialize that. And how do you do that? Well, if you draw this picture again, and you rotate it, and you rotate it again, and you rotate this, then what can I do? Well, I have one extra dimension because I'm symmetric monoidal. So I can pull, maybe I need a color. I can pull this over. And then I get something that looks like I get the sort of site that it's curled wrong. But I get things that roughly look like this. And this is what's called the serre. This is the serre automorphism for people that know. Okay, so what was the next step in what I was saying before? I was saying that, okay, now we want to take this this sort of weak O2 anti-involution with whatever that is, and we want to twist it by a given O2 action. And maybe this is the right point to get a little bit more concrete and see in some examples why this is a reasonable thing to do. So my sort of main example on the sort of target side of things is the category of the two category of aspect enriched categories, aspect enriched S because I want to work with fermions, and probably there's some finiteness conditions, finitely many simple objects, these semi-simple, finitely many simple objects. And what kind of action does this have? Okay, it still has this sort of complex conjugation action, but we also have the action given by the fermion parity operation, the sort of grading operation. And this defines a Z2 cross BZ2 action, which I would say is physically pretty well motivated to consider. Why is this relevant for the discussion? It's because it's a truncation of the orthogonal group. And actually, the only part of the truncation that you will need in this category level, so somehow like an O action is almost the same as a Z2 cross BZ2 action in this low category number. So maybe some O2 actions, they actually come from such actions. What is another example? Well, it's a Bordism by category. It has a similar action in which we have orientation reversal, and now this BZ2 action is sort of given by like spin. So instead it's given by not the fermion number, but it's given by the spin flipping operation. And suddenly it seems to be not so unreasonable to, if I have like a symmetric monoidal functor, suppose I have a symmetric monoidal functor from B1 to B2, which is like a once extended theory with fermions, then we already considered like Z2 equivariants. So Z2 equivariants is maybe a reasonable definition for Hermitian. But then BZ2 equivariance also has an interpretation. Namely, it tells you that the theory satisfies spin statistics theorem. So this is a physical motivation why it might be reasonable not to talk about sort of just O1 Z2 equivariant things, but to talk about the whole O2 equivariant things. So together, this is O2 equivariance. So O2 equivariant theories are theories that are both Hermitian and satisfy the spin statistics. So in particular, something like a spin statistics theorem, in a very abstract mathematical way, you can formulate it as saying that if something is unitary, then it's O2 equivariant. So if something is like a sort of the O1 version of Dagger, implies O2 equivariance. So this gives an idea of what spin statistics in a very abstract mathematical way is, and maybe how it would generalize to deeper co-dimensions. And this is like for non-extended, this is a thing that I proved. So proven for non-extended. It could be interesting to look at sort of spin statistics theorems as well for once extended unitary theories. Okay, so.
Huh? So it just this means that it's positive things to positive things.
O1 dagger? Yeah, O1 dagger, I mean, I didn't discuss it, but it would be similar to what I discussed on the slides. It would only send the O1 pairings to O1 pairings, but we can now also talk about O2 pairings. So O2 pairings are sort of further fixed points. So what is an O1 pairing now? Sort of the previous version, O1 permission pairing on, let's say on sket, so on a so what do we have to do? We have to sort of take C dual bar. So I have to pick an isomorphism between C bar and the dual here is the opposite category. And this satisfies more coherence.
I lost track of this. No, opposite just as the category.
Opposite as the category, yeah. So what is this? Like an O1 Hermitian pairing on an object of this category is sort of a weak anti-involution. There's some sort of microcosm principle going on here. So this is an O1 pairing, but now I can also talk about SO2 pairings, which are about not trivializing. So here we were not trivializing the dual, we were trivializing a twisting of the dual by the bar. Now we don't want to trivialize the serre, but we want to trivialize the twisting of the serre by fermion parity. Sorry, what am I saying? Yeah, exactly. So what are SO2 pairings? We want to take the serre in this two category, and I'm just going to tell you what it is. It's the so-called Nakayama functor. And we want to twist this by our choice of PZ2 action. And we want to trivialize this. And this turns out to be equivalent to what is called we're now working super. But if you weren't super, then it's equivalent to a Kolbe-Yau structure, which is like a collection of trace pairings. So, y. X. They're like non-degenerate symmetric bilinear pairings. And if I remember, I mean, the signs in this story are a huge headache, but if I remember the sign correctly, then actually it's there's no sign. It's I don't know, you would expect here to be like a minus one to the degree, but for some reason, well, for this reason, there's not. So this is a super Kolbe-Yau structure, and then so what is an O2 pairing? It's like those two which are compatible somehow. Okay, and which ones do we really like? My guess is the right sort of O2 pairings that are positive are positive, they are sort of, they satisfy two things. So one is sort of D is actually a dagger, so it's like a strict anti-involution. There's a mild lie here in the sense that this is a sort of super dagger. It's like you need this one. You do need a sign here. Okay.
So this doesn't parse for me. Dagger was more data than a weak anti-involution.
Yes.
A property.
That's a really good point. And and I think that, I mean, we should discuss this afterward. I think that there might be something going on here.
Everything else you've said is non-evil, so this can't be the right thing.
I mean, I need this to be able to say point two.
Okay.
And I'm fairly sure that point two is the right thing to say, but maybe there's a non-evil way to say this, and I would like
to
figure this out.
Being a node two pairing is being a node. Maybe being positive is more data than I thought it was.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing that I mean, maybe.
The positive might be just the data of making it into a dagger.
Maybe, yeah. Exactly. Okay, so if this is a dagger, then I can actually make I can make these into Hilbert spaces, Hermitian vector spaces, because I can use this to sort of go to the dual, and then I can move back by the dagger. And I can ask this to be a positive definite pairing. This seems to give the right. So in other words, I get sort of an S-Herm enriched vector, S-Herm enriched. And I can ask it to be S-Hilb enriched. How much time do I have?
15 minutes.
Oh, okay, that's a lot of time. Okay, didn't expect to have so much time. Very good.
And it confused by this hacker. But many things I don't expect that it's fine.
Things you don't expect what?
If this formal was 11 G of operations in Hilbert space, not expected minus one.
This minus one?
Yes.
Yes.
You have that minus one in your paper with Johnson Fred on.
I mean, this might also be like the standard like convention discussion about super Hilbert spaces, right? I mean, some crazy mathematicians like me and I guess also Theo prefer the convention in which super Hilbert spaces satisfy like equations like this. It just turns out to be. This is the thing that pops out of most categorical things, and this hurts, because like if you do this, then you will figure out that odd vectors are imaginary, they give imaginary.
Okay. And still, typographically, makes a lot of sense.
Yes, but it's. Maybe I should just say that it is actually equivalent. You just need to sort of multiply by I.
So
on
my question is there a simple convection shift that it defines this?
Yes, it's I to the F.
Yeah.
I to the F.
Okay.
Switches the two
convictions. Where is the I to the F somewhere?
Sorry? Huh?
Well, for odd operators to be self-adjoint, you have to like put a square root of I and some more.
Yes, exactly. Like things that are self-adjoint for me, they are things that, odd operators, for odd operators, sort of skew adjoint and self-adjoint are like.
This is exactly the square root of I that we had in our paper on modular forms.
Yeah.
So you have to like. So your convention.
So teaches you maybe.
Oh.
Yeah.
But okay, so maybe I should sort of say the main examples that the big example to keep in mind here.
Sorry, actually, Luke, question. Just the two group that you wrote, Z2, BZ2.
Yes.
So that splits, right? There's no K invariant.
There's no K invariant.
And no action also. Okay.
No action.
There are precisely two things, there are precisely two different groups on that space, one has a K-invariant, the other doesn't.
So if you, let's say I truncate later, like truncate all spectrum later, does any K-invariant show up?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, then you get a Z.
Which is non-trivial.
Exactly. In fact, I already have to deal with the Z. It gives me a condition, and I didn't work out the condition, but there's actually a condition.
Okay. That sounds really cool.
Yes, but at the next stage.
Wait.
No, go ahead. What? You want to ask a question?
Is it correct to say product of a self-adjoint fermion?
Products of self-adjoint. Wait, how does that make sense?
With this convention, the commutators work out. So with this convention, the commutators of self-adjoints are skew adjoints.
Yes.
Nice. Which is more important than the product work out.
Okay.
Maybe we should.
Never heard that.
It's also
I don't know. Exactly.
Convention that makes commutators work correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in this convention, you get this instead of with the sign. So that's maybe nice. Okay, so what's the sort of main example to keep in mind is that if you take a star algebra or like a superstar algebra. And again, I prefer these annoying conventions, right? Then A mod is sort of the weak anti-involution. Which maps M to sort of, I don't know how to write this, but it's sort of this, but this is naturally like a right A module, but then I can make it into a left sort of A bar op module, and then this is basically the formula. It's like the anti-involution for which for which Hermitian pairings are A-valued inner products. Inner products on M. And then lots of the unitary examples are constructed in this way. So for example, sub-example, okay, I just did step one. So this gives me this has an O1 Hermitian structure. So what if I want an SO2 Hermitian structure, then I need to give sort of a Frobenius structure. Sort of a, with the same weird convention in which there's no sign. So if I have a Frobenius structure, then A mod is super Calabi-Yau, and there's a compatibility that you can ask between them, which is probably, if I didn't mess up the signs, but who knows, it's probably this, but maybe there's a sign. Then it's an O2 Hermitian structure. So let's do the sub-example. So sub-example is, I could do something like A is Clifford 1. This doesn't have a graded symmetric Frobenius structure, but it does have this type of Frobenius structure. So the twist is actually necessary. And this is a star algebra, C star algebra. And this will give the ARF theory. So 2D, sort of the 2D theory with, so it gives, it makes sort of this theory unitary with partition function minus 1 to the ARF. And I should tell a joke about ARF. So there's this joke. So a guy comes into a bar with a dog, the bartender says, "There's no animals allowed in here," and the guy says, "Oh, but this is a mathematician dog," and so the bartender asks, "Do you know a manifold invariant?" And the dog says, "ARF," and the joke will actually continue in the next presentation. So please stay for room stop. So okay. So maybe another sort of example, which is more surprising than these kind of things, which is I could also have something which, okay. So I could do A mod again, but then let's say for A C. So for A C, I could do, so I get A mod is S-vect, but now I can do something stupid. I can just take a different weak anti-involution in which sort of D squared, I'm going to mess this isomorphism up. So I can mess this isomorphism up by say minus one. And then if I mess that up, then Hermitian pairings will not be Hermitian pairings. They will be like anti-symmetric, and then suddenly it will not be able to make it into a Dagger category. And you can show that you can do the computation on state spaces that this is like the trivial theory. It's like the, I mean, it's the trivial theory, but in which state spaces are negative definite. So in which such that the state space on, for example, a circle is negative definite. So these kind of, you can also construct these kind of silly examples. Okay, and why? So what is the general type of statements that we are proving? Still have blackboards left. It's incredible. Never have to erase anything. Magic. So let's maybe take one step back and talk about 1D. So in 1D, sort of the unitary 1D TFTs are classified by just one super Hilbert space. And Lucas and I have been figuring out how to do this plus with symmetries. So plus a sort of symmetry group. So for me, a symmetry group is something like you have an extension, and maybe there's also a time reversal. And then we have shown that there's, in addition, a datum of sort of a R. So R is a representation of the group in this Hilbert space. And why do I write R linear here? It's because what's going to happen is that this only commutes with I if G is non-time reversing, if G preserves time. And otherwise, it's going to be anti-linear. Reverses. And there's a unitarity, so there's even more, like here it is, so RG is unitary, a unitary linear operator, and here it's RG is anti-unitary. So that's maybe something that you expect from physics, that state spaces have this kind of structure. And of course, R of the fermion parity is the grading. Did I forget anything? I don't think I forgot anything. So this is sort of the structure of a unitary one-dimensional field theory with a symmetry. And we're now in the process of proving a similar thing for 2D. We already proved it for the O2 equivariant case, sort of without positivity. And I cannot move this up and down. I'm too small.
What a key.
Yeah, I'm too small. That's what I'm saying. Again, I cannot reach all the way up.
The row on the...
Huh?
The row on the right.
Oh, is there one more?
There's a row.
Oh, there's a row.
This is
okay.
Very backboard doesn't move.
I think I'm right.
Use that.
Oh,
what
day?
Oh, it's empty.
That is not going to use anyway.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yes, I'm okay. I will do something. Okay, so final point. So final theorem in progress. Is sort of the combination of this thing together with the 2D thing. So what is it? So a 2D unitary TFT with symmetry. Symmetry GF is, so C is sort of this thing that I outline here. Maybe a good name for it is maybe call this a super two Hilbert space, because it's exactly the super version of what Bias called a two Hilbert space. So maybe this is our definition of a super two Hilbert space. So C is a super two Hilbert space. So it's Calabi-Yau, it's a Dagger category, C linear, etc. Then we have, so rho of G are a collection of, they are either linear or antilinear depending on, maybe I will just write it like bar to the theta of G. So this is like something that's like, if it's time reversing, then it's complex antilinear. And this is like a Dagger functor, and it preserves the Calabi-Yau structure. Okay, maybe it's just an S-Hilb enriched functor. And then you have all the more data. So this is now data. This is like a unitary natural transformation. And there's a datum which says that rho of minus one to the f is minus one to the f. There's an associator condition. And let's see, so I even have something, so I could even have that this is, maybe it has pi 1, maybe it has some non-trivial paths, and if it has non-trivial paths, then I also get unitary natural transformations. Between two such functors. And I probably forgot something.
Where does the Calabi-Yau structure adjust things? It adjusts like in the associator or something like that? You explicitly referenced the complex conjugation, but you haven't explicitly.
What do you mean? The Dagger functors preserve the Calabi-Yau?
Is that all it is? It's you're saying it like.
It's
just that it all these other things preserve the structure?
I think it's only at the one morphism level.
And it's just a property, or just whatever. I don't know what preserves means.
You have a space collection on the non spaces.
Yes, that's
it. The fact that you want it to be unitary on the morphism.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's an equivalent. It's an S Hilb.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. So I think there's nothing here. This is just unitary things. And I think I should stop. And I probably forgot something, but I want to just sort of make maybe a remark that I think this is all interesting, because we expect that this should be maybe follow-up work that if I have a sort of co-dimension two manifold, so I imagine that I have space-time, and I split up space-time even further, as I'm allowed to do in a once extended field theory, and then I assign like a category of boundary conditions to that side, that that you expect that these type of things, they have in a unitary TFT, they admit a unitary two representation of the symmetry group. So that's what this is. I think I should just stop here. Thanks.
Question. So I have another question, but I don't know if it's a question for you or for after we hear the rest of the ARF joke. But I'll ask it now, and maybe you'll defer it. So there's some sort of thing, there's sort of a weird fact about O, which is that the bottom two homotopy groups of O are this, happen to be both the same group. And this weird fact means that you can sort of, you might, like, it might be sort of, that weird fact might be sneaking into your guess, for example. It's what let you extract some Hermitian pairings using these kind of O1 and SO2 structures together. And there's a sort of a little bit of this weird fact one dimension up, that like the Z in degree 4 is a lot like a Z2 in degree 3, and so.
Okay.
But this weird fact somehow doesn't continue. Is there, should I be worried about this? Did you use this weird fact secretly?
I don't know. I don't think so. Are you? I mean, this weird fact accident. I mean, if you're not very careful with choices, then it might accidentally come up. It does accidentally come up somewhere, but I'm not aware that I used it here.
Can you remind me again, what's the physical relevance of having that factorization of O2 into this table of O?
Which factorization?
O2 into O.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think there's necessary, like I could also, mathematically, I could imagine twisting my sort of O2 action by another O2 action and would be completely fine. But apparently, sort of, most of the things that appear here, they're just stable, probably because they come, I don't know, they probably come from some more higher categorical structure. I don't know.
So, do you think that going higher and higher in dimension would be harder at every step, or do you see a sort of uniform treatment?
I think so. Well, uniform treatment. Well, it depends on in terms of what you mean. I mean, there is now a definition of what a sort of extended, fully extended unitary TFT is. The question of, like, whether I'm able to do all these explicit computations is probably much harder. Like, I'm doing 2D things, and most people in this world think that, I mean, if you ask a high school student, they will say that 2D TFTs are rather trivial. But there's a lot of people here that do 3D TFTs. It's much more complicated, and probably the computations get exponentially more difficult between 2D and 3D TFT. Mm-hmm. Similarly, the computations that I'm doing between unitary 2D TFT and unitary 3D TFT will become much more difficult.
That's what the unitary version of the Kubernetes hypothesis that.
Yes.
The Kubernetes hypothesis is also not like super useful if you want to figure out what are five-dimensional TQFTs, mm-hmm. but somehow it organizes a lot of things, and there should be a unitary thing which is similar. It's like a nice abstract thing, and then computing it in practice will be hard.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe it will be, it could be like slightly easier, I think, to compute the unitary version of the Kubernetes hypothesis compared to the usual one. It's still like a lot of data, but sometimes it's a little bit, physically it's more intuitive, right? I mean, if you look at these formulas that I wrote, like probably a physicist could have told me this, that like a time-reversing symmetry gives me an anti-unitary operator. If I would do the same thing for a non-unitary TFT, I would get something that's physically a little bit more weird. I would get like, instead of the time-reversal symmetry would like correspond to like something like a non-degenerate symmetric bilinear form or something like that. But otherwise, it's still sort of, you still have a lot of computations to do.
Okay, it's just even more dramatic because, in fact, unitarity in physical stuff is the only reason I would expect things like semi-simplicity or
yes.
Any sort of finiteness.
Yes.
in encountering them in the one without mentality would be surprising. I'm not sure it happens. But if not, it would be difficult to build them into the, justify building them into a structure.
Yeah, here's like another sort of, this is another problem with sort of the way that I think about it, because I just think about it as I start with a topological field theory and I do stuff to it, and then it basically starts to already be semi-simple. I mean, unless we, maybe we should talk about like derived things, but I start with already being semi-simple and then I put unitarity on there. But if you're doing actual quantum field theory, of course you don't start with something that's already this finite. And then the unitarity puts serious restrictions on that kind of thing. So for me, it didn't. Mm-hmm. It started semi-simple.
For a spherical fusion category, correct me if I'm wrong, like calling it unitary, I can also see it as like saying that the quantum dimensions are positive and the, the F symbols can be written as a unitary matrix in some basis. So for the fusion two category, is there something at the level of the Stan-J symbols that we can say about?
So I haven't even like, to be honest, I haven't even like thought about unitarity, like unitary fusion categories sort of in this already for fusion one categories in this formalism. I would guess just, but that's just putting me on the spot right now, that if that you look at these kind of formulas and you would do the same, but then monoidally. Like now I'm doing everything for categories, but in 3D you would do everything for monoidal categories, and probably you would get something like unitary fusion categories maybe, but I haven't looked at those definitions to be even to able to say something, but we should discuss this. I'm curious what would happen if you would do this in 3 or 4D.
Any other questions? Thank you.